With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Adventures in .NET. I'm Sean Claver, your host. With me today is your other co-host, Caleb Wells.
Hey, Caleb. Hey, y'all.
Hey.
How's it going?
That's good. Did you have lots of food yesterday?
Yes. My wife cooked a lot, and over half of it is in the fridge for leftovers, right? Turkey and stuffing and green bean casserole and cranberry sauce and rolls, right? Too much.
Yeah.
It was so tasty.
Yeah. So as we record, yesterday was Thanksgiving. So it was just my wife and I, just a small dinner, but she just made me lots of stuffing, and we bought just this little 3-pound turkey breast butterball thing.
Yeah.
So we didn't want to have a whole lot of leftovers, but even 3 pounds for two of us was just plenty, and we probably still got half of it left. So we'll have some turkey and ham sandwiches or something like that.
Yeah.
Going next week. So it was good.
Good.
So, you know, heard from all the family, but didn't have any gatherings. So we wanted to play it safe.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that makes sense.
All right. So today our guest is Max Arshinov. Welcome, Max.
Hi, guys. It's really cool to be today with you. And so interesting to hear how you discuss Thanksgiving Day, because normally we only can see something like this in TV shows or cinemas. We don't celebrate something like this here. And it's so cool to hear something like this in real. It was really interesting. So yeah, hi.
Hey folks, if you love this podcast and would like to support the show, or if you wish you could listen without the sponsorship messages, then you're in luck. We're setting up new premium podcast feeds where you can get all of the episodes released after Christmas 2020 without the ads. Signing up will help us pay for editing and production, and you can go sign up at devchat.tv/premium.
So you're in Eastern Europe, right?
Yeah, I'm in Russia.
Russia, yeah. So, Thanksgiving is definitely an American holiday, right? But we enjoy it.
Yeah.
Does Russia have anything similar? Just a holiday for getting together for family and eating?
Oh yeah, sure. It's called New Year, because normally we have a whole week of vacation starting from January 1st, and everybody just visiting each other and, you know, eating. It's almost exactly the same thing, except for you do it only for one day, and we do it for 1 week, and it's too much. And right now, well, I think everybody understood that 1 week is just enormous amount of time, and it's not a good idea to have 1 week of holidays when you start the year. And people try to do something else, to go skiing or to go somewhere else, basically to have just yet another vacation, which you can spend with your family or with your friends and do something else apart from eating.
No, that sounds good. It makes me think of, you're saying 1 week's too long. I guess that really depends. I live in New Orleans, and most years we have Mardi Gras, which is 3+ weeks of party after party after party. When you get my age, you don't party that much, but it's a fun experience. But we're not doing it in 2012 because of COVID. But
2020. Yeah. 2020, we'll remember this year for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So, well, most people in the U.S. have today off as well. They make it a 2-day holiday, taking Friday off. And then with the weekend, it becomes a 4-day holiday. Mm-hmm. So it ends up being all right. today is usually one of the biggest shopping days of the year. So it's everybody has Thanksgiving off, and then they have this Friday off, and this is usually when all the sales start for Christmas.
Oh yeah, so, Black Friday, exactly.
Right, Black Friday. So this is usually a crazy day for shopping, but I think most of it's being done online this year. So
I've already racked up several items.
You're not going to wait for Cyber Monday, huh?
No, if it's a good deal, I'm all for it. Doesn't matter the day.
All right, cool. So Max, let's start out with, you know, kind of what you do and how you got into development and working with .NET.
Mm-hmm. I've been working with .NET probably for 12 or 13 years or something. I don't even remember. And as far as I remember, I have always been somehow related to computers, and I have never worked in different areas, except for I was a musician for a really short period of time in the university, but it was more like a hobby. So I started as a software developer, and basically I did some web programming, you know, websites, PHP, HTML, stuff like this. But I've never liked too much to work with PHP, because I started working with C# in the university. So I knew that C# is a better language, at least for me. But I had to work with PHP for quite some time, because I could only find a junior position job on PHP. And once ASP.NET MVC was released, I could switch to ASP.NET MVC development. For 1 year, I lived in Czech Republic and worked in Europe. Then I got back to Russia, and I worked as a project manager and for a short period of time as a head of QA department, totally accidentally. And I ended up being a co-owner of a small outsourcing company here. There are 30 of us right now, and we do what we can do the best. We write some custom software. It's more or less web apps, and I mean web apps that are too complicated to be built with existing software, like CMS systems, and basically everything that you can buy. So once our client want to run a new product, which is really different from everything else that they can build using existing systems, we connect and start a new project. And that's what we do right now.
Yeah, I imagine when you're building custom business solutions, similar to what Sean and I do as well, right? You run into some interesting problems and interesting solutions.
Challenges.
Yes, there you go. Challenges, right? You got to use the right terminology, right? They're not problems. They're just, yeah, exactly, right?
That is what I needed to learn when I started to work with foreign clients, that you don't say problem, never. You say issue or challenge or, you know, task or something, because problem is something really bad and really complicated.
Well, when it's between us devs, we can use problem, right? We can get away with it. But no, I'm...
Roadblock.
Roadblock. There you go. I don't have any blockers today. Or so and so is my blocker, right? This person is blocking me. Can you fix them? So one of the things that you've actually ended up doing deep dive into and have got had a good bit of experience with is expression trees.
Yeah, right.
And I think most people don't even know what they are in .NET C#. Can you give people a little info on their background?
Yes, so did I before I needed to do a really small fix, as at least I thought that it would be a really small fix. So I think when Lambda expressions and Lambda functions was introduced in .NET, Microsoft did a really good job to advertise Link itself, the technology, the Link syntax, and things like that. But for some reason, they did not advertise some technical details of the implementations of the implementation of Link. And queryable provider and expression trees are essential parts of this technology. And in order to understand how it actually works under the hood, you need to know these details. But on the other hand, the good thing about Link that you don't have to, I know that a lot of developers, they write a lot of Link-based code and they have no idea what it is and how it works. And this is a part of my standard interview with developers and a lot of people who claim themselves as senior developers. When I ask them, can you tell me how Entity Framework create a SQL query using your C# code? They just say, that's a framework. That's what it does. That's why we use Entity Framework. So I have always been curious about how things are built under the hood. And I have never been satisfied with simple explanations like this is just a technology, take it and use and so on. But this wasn't a case for the expression trees. I was satisfied with linking syntax and I was okay until we wanted to refactor our code in a way that we wanted to get rid of code duplication. And we noticed that there are a lot of link statements that we write once more and once more. And when we needed to update a single Lambda function, it appeared that this specific Lambda function was copy-pasted multiple times in the project. And it was really tedious to find all the places. So we knew about the specification pattern and we thought, okay, that's a good idea. That's a well-known pattern. And this pattern is designed to work with this specific challenge or problem. Okay. And it worked pretty well for specifications itself. And it worked pretty well for when we wanted to combine multiple specifications using AND operator, but when we tried to combine them using OR operator, it appeared that we can't, because when we write a link syntax, we implicitly write an expression tree, and the C# compiler do all the dirty stuff for us, and we just don't think about it. We don't know that this is an expression tree, that this specific Lambda is not a part of your code. It's not a delegate. It's something else. And the most complicated part of this technology, that it's so implicit and it's so easy to think that you are writing a delegate, and that if you don't know that expression trees exists, you probably will not until you end up in a situation like I've just mentioned. So I tried to write, okay, OR, and it didn't compile, and it told, and the compiler message was something like, no, you can't use OR operator here because the type of the variables that you're trying to combine is expression, and OR operator is not defined for type expression, blah, 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 blah. I was like, what? Expression, blah, blah, blah. What it is? Why? What kind of expressions? I thought this is a delegate. So right. I just counter-clicked on expression type and I was like, oh, this is something new. I have never thought about things like that. So I Googled expressions and I understood that this is something else. This is something I'm not familiar with. And I tried to Google something more advanced. Specifically, I wanted to understand how I can combine these. And it appeared that there is still not enough documentation on the official Microsoft website. You can find something. Okay, expression trees is a really fancy technology. Here is a piece of code, which is quite advanced and which we probably don't think that you would understand, but we don't care actually. So the next place was the Joseph Albahari website, and specifically it's a part about LinkyPad and LinkyKit, which is a library that is internally used for LinkyPad. I think
Sean, it's one of Sean's favorite libraries.
I've had that one of my picks because I just use that over and over so many times just to write something real simple, just to test some code is LinkPad. And then I've looked at his predicate builder with LinkKit a few times, but I've never really got into that. So you talked about always wanting to know things, how things worked. I wondered if when you were a kid, did you take your toys apart?
Yeah.
I did.
Quite often, yeah.
You know, expression trees are definitely a more advanced part of the framework, right? And like you said, it's how they use it to build link queries and actually, like you said, take the lambdas. I've actually had to work with expression trees before myself for a very edge case. And when you write it, right, it feels like you're back to where you're writing a lot of boilerplate like you used to do in .NET Framework 2 or whatever, which you don't have to do anymore. But I also found it interesting at the end of my expression tree, right, I actually compile on the Lambda to build it. And like you said, they're still doing stuff that we don't even understand even when you're creating your own expression tree. So it's interesting tech.
Yeah, definitely. And for me, this was a whole journey to the rabbit hole. I started with a really simple case, and I wanted my specifications to properly work with OR operator. That was my first and the only wheel at this moment. But when I started to experiment with the technology, I understood that, oh, this is a whole new world. And my analogy here is Inception movie by Hans Zimmer. When you have a sleep inside of sleep, you can, well, my idea was, okay, so this is a technology that grants you a way to build some advanced metaprogramming stuff without things like reflection.emit, without using even more low-level techniques, which related to probably modifying EL code or something. Mm-hmm. This is a high-level abstraction, actually, which is really close to what compiler does. So now we have Roslyn, which works fantastically with your source code, and expression trees are the technology which works really great in runtime. So if you have some data and you know that based on some data structures you can build some algorithms, but these algorithms you can't build these algorithms in compile time, that's a way how you can take your data structures and build code that you need in runtime, compile it, put it into cache, and then run it almost without any reflection related penalties, yeah. which is great. And we had a great discussion with a person from Israel who works with high frequency trading, and they run .NET for these tasks. And he told me that actually they were able to work with really advanced optimizing techniques, which called profiler-assisted optimizations, which are not available even languages like C++. So what they do, they take the telemetry from CLR and they try to use this information to recompile their code in runtime in a way that the resulting IL code is more optimized to the data that they work with right now. So they build more optimized data structures based on their current data. And when I heard that, it was like, oh, wow, this is really advanced stuff, you know? I don't do something like, yeah, very cool. And what I did, I could save a lot of boilerplate code that we write for business. Yeah, I needed to write a lot of more advanced boilerplate code using expression trees, but I could write a small library that works a really similar way to AutoMapper, but unlike AutoMapper, it doesn't do anything for the select statement. Mm-hmm. I build where statements automatically. I take DTO that you take from frontend. I take the generic parameter from your queryable. I then compare their properties, and based on properties and conventions, predefined conventions, I build where statements. So an example would be if you have, let's say, string name property in your entity, let's say that's a product, and you have name property of string type in your DTO, probably you would like to build a where statement, which is x arrow x dot name starts with the value of the name property from your DTO.
Yeah, yeah.
And we don't write too many filters anymore. We just write filter and sort for me, please, based on this T-type, and that's all.
You know, I try to stay away from boilerplate for the most part, right? Because I remember the ADO.net days where 90% of it was boilerplate. But if you can write some code that you can reuse hundreds or thousands of times, it's well worth it, right? I mean, that's kind of the end goal of what we're trying to do as developers. But my use case is not nearly as complex as yours, but some people may get a kick out of it. I actually used the expression tree to do something you really should never do. And
okay,
we have this is a previous job, but the table, the original author actually built a table where the columns, he wants to get all the rows associated with a certain column instead of getting all the columns associated with a row, which is what you normally do. Mm-hmm. And he did not want to change it. So I ended up having to write an expression tree where I call into this helper and I pass the column name and it queries the database and returns all the rows for just that column, which is a backwards way of doing it. And it's kind of odd, but it worked and it worked great. And he was happy and we were able to get what we needed and keep moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's another great example of some algorithms that you just can't write on in the compile time because this algorithm is based on your data structures, which are only available at runtime. So this is just another example. And actually, that's not the most advanced thing that I did with the expression trees. This was this was just the beginning. You remember the inceptions thing? So the next part was, this was a time when I was really curious about functional programming. I was exploring this area and I was like, category theory, things like that, monads, and everything was so complicated and so cool. And wow. So I liked the idea of combining functions into pipelines. And that's what you can do with the expressions. You have lambda, you can take different lambdas, combine them each other and build a single lambda as a composite of other lambdas. And you just wrap them up as a pipeline. So I was thinking, okay, this might be another cool metaprogramming technique. And what I can do with this? And it appeared that I can also transpile it to JavaScript because I've never wanted to write JavaScript too much. And I can't remember all the frameworks and I can't update all my code every day because every day there is a new version of a JavaScript library or there is a new JavaScript framework. And my idea was, okay, front-end guys, they use things like Babel to transpile JavaScript from JavaScript. Okay, I have a better idea. I'll transpile my C# code, which I used to work with, to JavaScript. And
I think I have an even better suggestion, which wasn't around a couple of years ago. And, and Sean knows where I'm going. Blazor,
yeah, right, yeah.
Right? That way you don't have to deal with JavaScript at all if you don't want to.
Yeah, but I mean, it was several years ago. Blazor was far from being production ready. And I'm so excited about .NET Conf this year. There were so many Blazor-related talks. And hopefully, we'll be able to work with Blazor on front end and with ASP.NET on back end, and we'll never have to write in JavaScript anymore.
Hey, folks, this is Charles Maxwood, and I just launched my book, The Max Coder's Guide to Finding Your Dream Developer Job. It's up on Amazon. We self-published it. I would love your support. If you want to go check it out, you can find it there, The Max Coder's Guide to Finding Your Dream Developer Job. Have a good one. Max out.
So, well, with transcribing it or compiling it to JavaScript, right, or using a converter. So in C#, right, you've got a method that you've created. Are you basically taking that method and rewriting it in JavaScript or having it write it for you? How did you go about that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So this is really similar to process when you write your own queryable provider. If you have ever tried to do so. And the most challenging part is that you have to cover so many cases. So normally you start with writing not supported exceptions, throw new not supported exception to limit the amount of code that you actually support. So I decided that what I would like to do is to keep my validation logic on the backend. And I didn't want to copy this validation logic on the front end. So basically, if we try to think about validation, what it is, and if we try to think about functions in functional programming way, this is just a function that takes your object as a parameter and returns bool as a result. So this is...
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Are you loving Adventures in .NET? Want to help us cover the costs of putting the podcast out every week? Well, all you have to do is go to adventuresin.net, that's .NET.com/premium, and you can sign up to give us $9 a month. And what that'll get you is it'll get you those ad-free episodes, which is a better way for us to pay for the podcast than putting the ads in. You'll also be able to support the show in joining a monthly call where we get on and we talk about what topics you want to hear about, what guests you want to hear from, and we will be able to dive into further ideas about how we can make the show better. And lastly, it's just a terrific way to support the show and let the hosts know that you appreciate them. So go to adventuresin.net, that's adventuresin.net, dotnet.com/premium to sign up.
A validator. So you can define your validation logic as lambdas, as expression trees. Then for your backend code, you can run .compile method to create delegates. Then you need to cache them somewhere. And for the JavaScript part, you need to use an expression visitor to go through your expression tree and to build the corresponding JavaScript code, which is not that difficult because you don't want to cover too many cases. You basically need arithmetic operations, method call expression, parameters, and yeah, regex. Regular expressions, and these three covers 80% of 90% of validation logic cases. And then you can start with this subset of all the JavaScript code. And when you need to implement something more sophisticated, well, you may choose from improving your implementation and supporting more JavaScript code and more C# code and more mappings between those two. Or you can give up on this and say that, okay, there are really, really difficult validation scenarios and you would better run a web request to your backend and write for the synchronous validation from the backend. Because, yeah, it's practically impossible to support all the C# code, I mean, all the translations of the C# code to the corresponding JavaScript code. But in reality, you don't have to. And I think that's a good approach to limit the scope you work with, because it's, well, there are too many things that we need to do. And for all my career, I've never had enough time to implement everything. All my ideas, I just need to focus on something and try to do my best. But you need some limits.
Wouldn't it be nice if we had endless amount of time to do the fun things the way we want to do them? Yeah, that's really cool.
Actually, I think that over time, I managed to somehow overcome this limitation, and especially working with different architecture styles. So what we do, we try to get the ideas from our previous project and rethink them and implement them better in our next projects. And we always try to analyze what was good in the previous project, what we can learn from it, and what we can take with us, and what was not so good, and what we need to get rid of. And for the last 5 years, I think, for me, it was a constant process of involving and rethinking my attitude to lab app architecture and some engineer techniques, approaches. Every time I try to think, was it good? Was it a good fit for a project? And do I really need this technique? And if I need, do I need it as a whole, or I can take a small part of this approach or technology or a practice, anything. And right now, my understanding of a good architecture is a mix of ideas from functional programming, from CQRS, from DDD, and I try to take only a part of the, well, philosophy, let's say, or guidance, which really works for me and which I really understand how to work with, and I really understand how it can, how I can benefit from it, you know.
So I think one of the most common problems, challenges that people run into dealing with where they might end up getting into expression trees is that or problem. You know, everybody's tried to write an entity framework query, and then they say, okay, I got to do an or. And I think most people probably cheat and they end up writing separate queries and then oring those two together outside of entity frameworks. So is that one of the easier things to handle with expression trees? Kind of an introductory to expression trees would be, you know, solving that or problem?
I mean, these are two similar and connected questions, but not exactly the same. So the first part, as I've already mentioned, is that, yeah, we have queryable provider and we rely on queryable provider. And I've never tried to write, well, yeah, no, I tried to write my own queryable provider once, but practically speaking, it's just enormous amount of time that you need to invest into writing your own implementation. So it's better to help the EF core team and to help them to make their queryable provider even better than it is right now.
So queryable provider, that's what actually does the translation from link to SQL?
Yeah, and this is a part of Link which runs the query. If you click on eQueryable interface, you'll see that it has expression property and it has something like create query and run query or something like run query. I don't remember the name of the method. So basically, that's a runner, and expression tree is something that is being translated into query and then what is invoked by the queryable provider. So you can use expression trees independently and regardless of whether you need to work with entity framework or Riesling. That is a let me think how to say it properly. Yeah, that's an independent technology, which I think was designed internally to support Link, but it has a lot of use cases outside of Link. And many people confuse expression trees with Link, with queryable providers, where expression trees is really important, but not the only part of Link, you know?
Do you think like a normal senior .NET developer would be able to get into expression trees and create an expression that handles that or case like Sean mentioned? You think that's reasonable for most senior developers to attempt?
Absolutely. And maybe I'm old-fashioned. I'm not sure. I'm not only a CTO. I also a teacher in the university for 3 years already, maybe. And what I did, my idea was, okay, when I was a teenager, I really struggled with our teachers in the university because they teach us outdated things. So I decided I will be another guy. I will go to the most advanced and cutting edge technologies and let's see what will happen. So we go into CLR memory models, multi-threading, the implementation of async await. We decompile async await methods to see the finite state machine that is generated by the C# compiler. Then we go into the details of thread scheduler and we review options of a continuous method and things like that. Also, we work with the expression trees and with queryable providers. And my students, they as a part of their educational program, they have to write their own expression visitor, and they have to work with queryable providers, and also they need to combine some technologies together. I mean, like one of their homeworks is you have a string as an input, and they need to write a calculator which takes the string as an input. Then it divides the string into parts. It understands which operations can be done in parallel, simultaneously, and then the calculator itself is not located in the process, and instead it's located on the web server with ASP.NET. So they need to take this string, create a tree to understand which operations can be done in parallel, and then run parallel queries using async await and wait them all using task.whenall or something, then get the result. That's what we do as a homework. So
sounds like an assembler.
No,
basically interpreting a line of C sharp, tokenizing it.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, when you start to work with microservices, for instance, you get into the situation when you think that, oh, it's really similar to how processors work. You have eventual consistency everywhere. You have latency. I mean, like a CPU core and L1, L3 caches and things like that. You always need to synchronize your memory between cores. Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Yeah.
So, we're talking expression trees and a good bit of functional programming. Do you find that you write more functional or more object-oriented programming in C# these days?
So, I noticed that each new version of C# nowadays introduces some new features from F#. So I believe that F# is a playground for Microsoft R&D teams. So
absolutely.
They can take a look what works and what's not, and then take the best parts of the functional stuff to C#. So there was a moment when I was so excited about functional programming, so I wanted to rewrite all my code in a functional way. But it was a really short period when I understood that this is a not really good idea. So first of all, because C# itself is more like object-oriented language, and the basic predefined behavior which we have in C# is more object-oriented. We need to write classes, we have a mutable state, and we have this by default public policy. So if you would like to write code in functional way in C#, you have to rewrite a lot of default behavior. And I think that it's a good indicator of you are using a wrong tool. If you really need a functional approach, you'd better take a functional language like F#. So right now I'm standing somewhere in between those two, and I'm trying to combine in a way to take good parts from both worlds. Yeah, I think that it's 50% object oriented and 50% functional. But what I find challenging is to find this balance between those two, because they're quite different. So right. Rule of thumb for me maybe is when you work with multi-threading and you don't want to go to mess with things like lock or even with more advanced synchronization techniques, the best thing you can do is to get rid of any lockings in your code. And by doing so, you most likely get into functional way of doing stuff, because if you don't have a mutated state and you don't need to synchronize anything, well, welcome to the functional world. That's what they do.
Good deal.
So what are some things that we haven't covered about expression trees or functional programming that people should know about?
So, about the expression trees, I think that we'll have a link to my talk from NDC. So those who are listening right now and who would like to see other applications, they can take a look. I tried to cover all available topics, basically everything what I know about the expression trees. So yeah, the most interesting part for me was that I could do some metaprogramming with expression trees. And speaking of functional programming, for me, it was a good moment when I could combine some ideas from the world of functional programming with the expression trees. So I really, the biggest benefit for me is that I got rid of a boilerplate code in my business apps, and I managed to take some infrastructure related code into libraries, and now we work with them on different projects. And for those who would like to learn functional programming in effortless and funny way, I really recommend F# for Fun and Profit website. This is a brilliant website built by Scott Flashen, and I really recommend it to anyone who work with C# and would like to learn F#.
Are there some other resources out there for expression trees that you'd recommend?
Yeah, I mean, you can go to Joseph Albahari website. I think that's a page about his C# in nutshell book, and or probably the page about LinkKit. So yeah, that's a good starting point. And Joseph did a great job explaining some things. And also, I'll paste this link into our document. There is a really good blog post by Pete Montgomery who wrote about Predicate Builder and about some important implementation details of the expression trees, which helped me a lot when I needed to understand how to combine the expression trees. So it was a groundbreaking point for me. So I struggled to understand the exceptions. And Microsoft documentation was insufficient. And once I found this blog post, everything became clear to me, and I could proceed. And yeah, it was really helpful for me.
Cool. Very cool.
So I think we're going to push towards picks, but before we do that, if people have questions and they want to reach out to you, how can they do that?
Okay, so the best way is to write an email. Oh, wow. I found that we have a perfect list of links on our website. I'm sending it right now to our chat. So yeah, you can take a look. Yeah, it's LinkSpecs, Predicate Builder by Pete Montgomery, by Joseph Albahari. And yeah, we did not cover Delegate Decompiler. That's a really crazy stuff.
You can cover that real quick if you want to.
Yeah, so I can just give you an idea. So one person managed to go backward. I mean, you can create delegate from the expression tree by calling the compile method. But what if you would like to go in an opposite direction? So what he did is he took get IL as byte array method available as a part of system.reflection namespace, which basically returns array of bytes, which you can convert into array of opcodes using mono.cecil. And by going through this array of opcodes and mapping it into expressions, you can build an expression tree from a delegate. That's a really crazy stuff. And it's even more advanced, and it's not ready. It's pre-alpha 0.23 version or something. But I like the concept, and I like the approach of doing some weird stuff, you know?
Cool. Cool. Yeah, I really played around a little bit with expression trees, and LinkPad really helps you do things like that. I've had LinkPad as one of my picks before. So, but it's nice to just fire up this small little interface and type in your C# or enter your framework code and run it. And it'll dump out what the IL is. It'll dump out what the SQL that's getting sent to the database, all that kind of stuff. That really helps, especially
Absolutely.
If you want to get started into expression trees. Definitely try doing it first in LinkPad.
Yeah,
you don't have to do the full blown Visual Studio project to get your feet wet.
Hey, folks, I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been working a lot on figuring out how to help people become the most valuable developers on their teams or becoming the top 5% of developers in the field. If you're looking to level up, figure out how to contribute more, get the career you want, get the career that you want that will support the lifestyle you want, then you should check out the Most Valuable Dev Summit. I've invited some of my friends across the community, people that you've heard of, people that have worked on systems that you use on a daily basis, people who have invented new ways of doing things over the years in programming, and I've asked them one question, and that question is, how do you become a top 5% developer? How do you become one in 20 of the best developers out there? And so we're going to go ahead and have that conversation with them in interviews on the Most Valuable Dev Summit. And you can find that at summit.mostvaluable.dev.
All right, great. So I think we're going to go on to picks now, and I will go first. And
all right,
just this week, HBO restarted their second season of a series called His Dark Secrets. His Dark Materials. So it's based upon a novel series by Philip Pullman. Kind of ironic that I live right outside of a city called Pullman, but it's a really, it's a cool series. It's the second season just started, and it's kind of about a multi-world, multi-universe type environment where there's a one little girl that's got some powers and things like that, and she's going on quests. So if you like, you know, sci-fi, multiverse, quest type shows, definitely check out His Dark Materials. All right, Caleb, what's your pick?
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, Caleb, what's your pick?
Yeah, my pick this week is actually me. I've really enjoyed doing this podcast and decided I wanted to branch out a little bit more and do some tutorial stuff and maybe some screencasts. So I'm actually starting up a YouTube channel where I'm going to be doing a bunch of odds and ends and probably doing some videos that will tie back into some of our podcast episodes. So by the time you're listening to this, I should have, you know, a good few videos out there. So if you're curious, go take a look and let me know what you think.
Just search for your name. Is that what you're going to name the channel?
Yeah, it's my channel is, it's just Caleb Wells. And I'll add a link to it in the show notes. But yeah, just Caleb Wells.
All right, cool. I'll check it out. All right.
Cool.
All right, Max, you want something that our listeners should know about? Could be anything. Could be food, book, technology, anything.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't prepared that that I can mention something non-technical. Let's think for a moment.
You can make multiple picks. So if you want to have a technical pick and a non-technical, that'd be good.
Let me think. Okay. It's too late right now. I can't figure out anything as of now.
Yeah, it's almost midnight for you, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
We understand.
So the next time I can be prepared to pick something.
Have you watched any good movies lately?
Oh, well, I enjoyed a TV series. I think, it's called Luther. It's with Idris Elba. Yeah, a short miniseries. I enjoyed it. It's strange in a way, but it was good.
All right, cool. Thanks for coming on the show, Max.
I
think it was a good topic. I think it's more advanced than what we've done in the past. So I think that's good because we do have some definite advanced users out there, and this topic should be helpful for them. But even for the beginners, it's definitely something you should look forward to and dig into, you know, as soon as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for inviting me. It was a really good discussion today. I enjoyed it.
Great.
Yeah, we did too.
All right, thanks. And if our listeners want to reach out to the show, we would love to hear from you and get some feedback. Please get in touch with me on Twitter. I am @.NetSuperhero.
And I actually have another thing. I'm back on Twitter. I'm back on Twitter.
You're on Twitter.
I pulled up my old account. I actually found it and I changed my name. So it's Caleb Wells Codes. So they can reach out to you or to me or to adventuresin.net. So I'm actually getting with the times and using Twitter now. Yeah. Heaven help us.
All right. Well, you should match that with your YouTube channel. So they should both be Caleb Wells Codes.
Well, yeah. I just tried Caleb Wells and it's already taken. It was Caleb Wells 1 and branding, right?
And also, I remember my pick for this week. That's Yeah, that's a really old one. So for those who enjoys listening to the music, I recommend to listen to Starmania, which is a French music show, really old one, but I liked it, especially if you like the songs in French.
Okay. Yeah, you'll have to give us a link to that because I am not familiar.
Yeah, it's called Starmania. Yeah, it's a musical.
All right, cool.
So, yeah, if you like something like Notre Dame de Paris musical, this is an older one, but also it's also French one, and some songs from this musical, I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah, it debuted in 1978, a really well old one.
I was 2 years old.
I was 12, so got you beat.
Just a little bit.
All right, guys.
And
thanks,
I wasn't
everybody.
And I wasn't even born.
Great show.
Yeah.
We'll catch everybody else on the next episode of AdventuresIn.net.
Bye, y'all.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.